because, you know, Angie's doing about triple time for the family. And I got home at 10:30 with the groceries, and by the time you get groceries put up, and that's hard work. I didn't know that was that hard. You got to make the canned goods match and everything in our pantry. But so I finally got upstairs and got ready for bed, and then you got to set your clock. And I'd been thinking all day so I got home at 10:30, but I was thinking it was 9:30, really, because you're going to change your clock. And then when I got upstairs and got ready to go to bed, and I reached over to change the clock, it's the first time it dawned on me that it went the other way. And so it was really midnight when I got in bed. So I don't know why I don't know about this time change deal and why God couldn't just get this right so us Americans wouldn't have to mess with it. But anyway, it is what it is. We're going to be in Joshua chapter 2 today, but before we actually get to the text, I know that you've seen a lot of maps. If you've been around the Brotherhood very long, or you've studied very much Bible, or if you own a Bible, you've probably looked at the maps before in the back of the Bible when somebody was preaching or teaching. And today that would be okay since I'm teaching and we won't look at maps. But I just want to show you a few maps here just to be sure that you're absolutely clear about what's going on when we talk about the conquest of Canaan. And I want you to think in your mind more than just the maps that you see. I want you to think about the circumstances that are surrounding these people. I think that it gets lost on us if we don't do that, because they've been wandering in the wilderness for 38 years, 40 years. And for 40 years, they've been preparing to do nothing. Nothing. There wasn't anything for them to do. And during that same 40-year period, while they were planning to do absolutely nothing, all of their enemies who had heard stories about the promise given to Abraham about the land they were possessed, were preparing for battle. Their enemies were building armies. They were building chariots. They were building weapons. They were exercising in the field military strategies. And oh, stupid Israel is just wondering and wondering and wondering. And so one day God stands up and says, guys, it's time to go take the land. And so if you look at this particular map here, you'll see the 12 spies. That's really what I want to mention right here. You'll see that the 12 spies in the book of Numbers chapter 13, when they went into the land, they went in and checked the land from the very bottom edge of the very southern tip of what would ultimately be their land. And now all of a sudden we find that they've moved up as God has moved them on to this journey of conquest. And they're camped on the east side of the Jordan River, right where the store is at. And across the river, not too far into the land, is a city called Jericho. Now, this is a little bit hard to read. I mean, don't worry about the names. Worry about the lines on the map with me here. So we have the red line here that shows the wilderness wandering. And then the blue line, when God puts them on the march to begin to go take the land, he moves them up the east side of the Jordan, and then we're going to see where they go into to Canaan land. I think this thing ought to help us right here. They're going to go right in here where Jericho's at, and then they're going to spend a number of years subduing the southern end of the country where the greatest population is at before they move into the northern area of the country, and then subdue that area as well. Now they enter right at the point of Jericho, so they can divide that land into north and south. Rather than coming in from the south and fighting their way all the way from the south, all the way to the north, they go up on the side so they can divide this thing right in the middle. And that's going to serve them well, because with every victory that happens in that southern area of the land is going to send fear to the north. And a fear-filled enemy is not quite as dangerous to you as someone who has confidence. This map here is an interesting map. This map was actually drafted in 1899, and the fellow who did this did a really nice job on it. As you recall, in the very first chapter of Joshua, and if you were to read some of the other earlier texts back in Numbers and back in Deuteronomy, you'd see where there was this agreement made with Moses by the tribe of Reuben to occupy the east side of the Jordan and by Gad in the half-tribe of Manasseh. Now, this Manasseh group is a big group right here because this is going to be the other half of Manasseh over here when they conquer the land. But only a half-tribe of Manasseh gets the east side. And it's because this area here is so fertile and so rich, it's perfect for the kind of life they live, what they do for a living. It's perfect for the sheep and the goats and the oxen and the agricultural business they're in. And so they're going to come up, you know, as they came out of the wilderness one, and they came up this side here, they whipped all these guys right here. And some of these tribes here begin to go ahead and settle into what would ultimately become their homelands before they cross over the Jordan here and support their brothers in subduing all this land and having these tribes here actually divided out as well. Okay, so who's in the land? I mean, we read this all the time, and if you're if you live in the Old Testament, you were a kite or a sight or a tight, right? I mean, that's what you were. You had something in front of it, but you was either a tight or a kite or a sight. You're a Hivite or a Jebusite or a Hittite or, you know, Amalekites. And we see these names repeated throughout the Bible on numerous occasions. Matter of fact, there's a lot of verses, just verses, where God says, and I'm going to send you in, you're going to whip. And he just starts naming the tribes one after the other. You know, you get into the Sites and Vites, you're just there for a minute where he's just laying it down on the ground and said, this is going to be all people going to go there and take out. You're going to purge the land of all these people. This right here is kind of the general area where these people resided. Notice the Canaanites there, because our main character today, Rahab, the prostitute, is actually a Canaanite. She has nothing going for her because she's a Canaanite. And the Canaanites have already been told, you're going to lose the land. God's going to drive you out. And of course, they're up in the northern area here, not too far away from. As a matter of fact, you'll see they come right down to almost where Jericho's at right here. All these people here in the land, God says, all these people right here got to go away because this is my people's land. We got the wrong people in my land. A little bit more of a detailed map. You know, in the other map where we saw the blue lines, we talked about them coming across into Jericho and the battles that were fought and then all the battles that happened along the way here in the south. You see a lot of marching, a lot of war, a lot of battles here before they kind of move up right along the Jordan River up to the northern area to take out the few tribes that are up here. And now you can see Manasseh over here on this side and on this side. Large tribe, large group of people. Interesting map here. It kind of tees up Numbers 13, Deuteronomy 2, and Joshua chapter 12 for us. And you can see this arrow right here. This was the 12 spies who came in the book of Numbers. Took a quick look here, and they came back with one message. And now this arrow right here is where God's brought them up through this side of the river here, and has got them poised right now to go right into battle to cross over Jordan. And that's what we're going to be studying today, is the first look into the land, and then next week we'll see where they cross that Jordan River right there. You can see Gad here. Of course, Manasseh's up here again, and the Reubenites are here to the south. But I think the real point of the story, once you get beyond the maps, and you should have that picture in your mind, and you should understand that all these nations here, I mean, our news network today is pretty robust, but it was robust enough back then for everybody to know the news that trouble was coming. Everybody knew trouble was coming. But the real point of the story today is going to be this item right here, the scarlet cord or the scarlet robe hanging off of some window, off of somebody's house, on some wall in the city of Jericho. And so we're just going to leave that up there. And what I'd like to do right now is go to Joshua chapter 2, if we could. In Joshua chapter 2, it starts by saying that Joshua chooses a couple of guys to go in and spy out the city of Jericho. Now, don't you know? Let's read here. Just read with me 2:1. We're going to kind of chop this up today, so you'll have to have your Bible and you'll have to kind of work with me here. But in Joshua chapter 2, it says, Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent 2 spies, and he said, go look over the land. He said, especially Jericho. So they went and they entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab, and they stayed there. Don't you know that all the nation of Israel, what happened the last time they sent in spies? In Numbers chapter 13, what happened as a result of that? Can't hear you. Say it again. 40 years in the wilderness, right? Don't you know the children of Israel going, oh man, we're not sending spies in again, are we? I sure hope he chooses two good ones. Because last time we sent him in, we got 40 years out of it, and we got 40 years of nothing out of it. And don't you know the two spies who went in, as they're walking over and kind of secretly going through the wilderness there, they're whispering to each other and say, look, I don't care what we see, we're going to carry a good message back. Even if we have to lie, we're going to carry a good message back. We're going to carry, we can take these guys, we can beat these guys. There's nothing we can't do, Joshua. Don't you know they're whispering to themselves? Because they think we don't want another 40 years. 40 years was enough for us. We're not going back 40 more. Did you notice it says they were going to go in and look over the land? It says go in there and look over the land. Brethren, that's not too bad advice, is it? I don't know how your calendar looks on any given day. My calendar, number one, it's not an 8-hour calendar. That's the first thing I notice most days. And the second thing I notice, out of the 8 hours that I'm supposed to be there, about 7 of those are phone calls, 30-minute phone calls back to back. And on any given day, I don't even have time to just look over the land, right? I don't have time to step back from anything and kind of really appraise where I'm at and what might be going on, the environment around me, the circumstances that might cause me to sin, the anger I might be generating as a result of a certain situation. I just don't have time to step back and look over the land. Sometimes with Alyssa, in case you don't know, Alyssa has the ability to be persistent. If you've interacted with her much, you know that. Now, she's a good kid. She's a really, really good kid. We have 4 wonderful children. Good kid. But she has that ability to be persistent, you know, about saying, yeah, but my friends and Dad, I need to go, and Dad, I want to go. And sometimes in that pressure of trying to satisfy my child, sometimes I don't look over the land very well. Sometimes I don't step back and say, well, is she going to be with the right friends? Is she going to be doing the right things? Is she going to be safe? And you know, sometimes, sad to say, just to keep peace, sometimes I just kind of settle the matter just to have peace in the family. Terrible parenting decision, isn't it? You know what the Bible says in Psalms chapter 94? Psalms 94 says, look, you senseless ones, you need to take heed rather than listen to the noise of the foolish ones. Ecclesiastes says it's better to take heed from a man who will rebuke you than listen to the foolish song. Take heed. It's a good thing to step back sometimes and look over the land, isn't it? I don't do that near as often as I should. It's a good thing to step back and just meditate for a minute, just figure out exactly where you're at. Are you caught up in culture? Or are you caught up in obeying God? Good thing. Step back and look over the land. Now it says that she went in, that these two spies went into the house of a prostitute. And man, if you were to read a few commentaries on this, you're going to read so much noise that you're not going to know what to make of it. And so I'm not going to tell you that I know what to make of it. There's some commentaries who say that these guys, since they were away from their wives and away from the Israelites and nobody could see it, were out there and just doing mischievous things. You know, they wanted to be with the prostitute. I don't necessarily believe that. But I'll tell you one thing for sure. It says they went to the house of a prostitute, and I bet these wasn't the first men who ever went into that house. And I bet the general community around Jericho there, all the people, all the citizens of Jericho, probably didn't pay a lot of mind to 2 men walking into the house of Jericho or to Rahab. As a matter of fact, some of the guys might have been saying, boy, she's making the business today, isn't she? She's making money today, isn't she? So it's probably no big deal. So they enter into the house of a prostitute. Now, that's significant when we get later on in the text right here. Read with me a bit more. In about verse 2, it says, the king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Look, I want you to bring out these men who came to you and who've entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the 2 men and hidden them. She said, yes, yeah, you're right. The men came to me. But I did not know they were here I did not know where they'd come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left. I don't know which way they went. Why don't you go after them quickly? You might catch up with them. But the reality was she had taken them up to the roof and she'd hidden them under the stalks of flax. And she lay down on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Now, she's a liar, right? She's just a liar. There's no other way to color it. I mean, we can mess around with that and try to justify what we're going to, but she's a liar, right? Now, I thought it was interesting this morning, and Ken didn't call me and tell me this, but I think I heard Ken say this morning in his lesson. I thought I heard him say this. But they ran an ad in the newspaper that was either illegal or might have been illegal. And I think I know of some brethren who, during the time of the Iron Curtain, couldn't just carry Bibles into Russia, so they did what? Smuggled them in, didn't they? They smuggled them in, right? And so I'm not going to sit here and try to make any kind of justification for what she did, because there's not any justification for doing wrong, right? When Angie and I have an argument, that Angie always starts. She always gets around to asking me why I did that. I hate that question. And I've warned her not to ask me no more. And since she's not here, I'm going to tell you that. Because, you know, I've come to realize in our years of marriage that the only sane answer is, honey, I don't know how to justify bad behavior. You ask me why, and I, you know, it's just because I'm outright stupid. Nothing more. And we have heard. But I mean, when you get into that discussion, it kind of spirals down, doesn't it? I mean, particularly with our children, I start, yeah, but you know, and it just spirals down and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And you know, it's just no justification for bad behavior. But somehow or another, in spite of some of the things that we do, God does look past the act into the heart, doesn't He? And He works around it, doesn't He? Somehow or another, He works around it, doesn't He? Somehow or another, He can see deeper than what we can see. And when we're out there judging right and left and making all kinds of determination, somehow or another, God can see deeper. And in that depth of looking, He can work around the act to make it useful. That's a pretty good thing, isn't it? That's a pretty good thing. Because if I had to guess, I'm looking in the faces of people who have lied on occasion. If I had to guess. But isn't it good that God can look past the act and understand the heart? Boy, I'm grateful for that. I wish my brethren could do that. I wish I could do that. Sure would alleviate a lot of my pain around judgment of thinking about what people should be doing. And sometimes I just don't get it. But in spite of the fact that she lied, God could look past the act and He could get to the heart. Verse 8. Just a second. I'm going to get a bigger print Bible soon. It is verse 8. I'm sorry, brother. My eyes are just, as I get older, I don't know. I'm not going to be able to find my way. I'll be teaching at the Catholic Church a month from now because I'll be in the wrong building here. They're just getting worse. I don't know what's going on. Verse 8. Before the spies laid down for the night, she went up to the roof and she said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in the community, why, they're just melting because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea. When did that happen? Long time ago, right? We heard about it. And we still remember how the Lord dried up the Red Sea. Keep reading with me here. So that when you came out of Egypt and what He did to Sihon and Og, you remember those two kings? Numbers chapter 21. Remember? They come up, they're coming up the east side of the Jordan there, and they go out and they send for Sihon the king, right? And Sihon has a great, great army. Great kingdom and great army. And what do they ask of Sihon? Do you remember? Just want to pass through, right? And they say, we won't take anything. Just let us walk. We won't take anything. We're not going to go out in your fields. We're not going to go out in your villages or your towns. Just let us come through. What will Sihon say? Nope. Idiot. I mean, you think he heard about the Red Sea and them crossing on dry land? You reckon he heard? He says, nope. you're not coming through. So God whispered down and said, don't worry about them. I'll take them out for you. And Sihon falls. And they ravage the cities. Once they promised not to go in, and now because God gives them the land, they ravage the cities. And then Og is the next layer up, right? Now he knows, you know that he's heard about the Red Sea. And now he has real evidentiary information that's real immediate, right? Because he's just heard about the defeat of Sihon, right? And so this guy marshals his army and said, but we'll get them. Nope. And so Rahab not only knows history of 40, 80 years ago, she knows immediate history. She says, we heard about Sihon and we heard about Og. We heard exactly what you did to the kings of the Amorites that were east of the Jordan, end of verse 10 here, and how you completely destroyed them. When we heard of it, why, our hearts melted and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God, brethren, he's the God that is in heaven above and on the earth below. That's the God we serve today. The God of heaven above and the God of earth below. That's who we worship this day. Now this poor old lady, this old call girl, doesn't have not one thing going for her. Not one. First, she's a Canaanite. And the Canaanites have already been told that they're going to be purged from the land. So she knows that she's moving. She doesn't know when the truck's going to arrive, but she knows she's moving. She's a pagan worshiper. She's an idolater. I mean, she may have even practiced prostitute to the gods at some point in time. Who knows? But she hadn't been a follower of Jehovah. So she's a Canaanite, somebody in a strange land that's fixing to get moved, and she knows nothing but pagan worship in her history. And the third thing she has against us is her occupation, right? I mean, there's not many of us who like to socialize with prostitutes. We don't want our children around prostitutes. We don't want to live in areas where prostitutes fester the neighborhood. She doesn't have anything going for her. Not one thing. Not one. Save the fact that we know that the God that belongs to you, Israel, is the God of heaven and the God of earth. Kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, you're looking at a fella that when my first wife left me, on July 17, 1985, it's funny how some things get etched in your memory forever. We separated on that day. My oldest daughter was 10 years old. Her birthday was July 12. So 5 days after her birthday, we separated forever. And so I'm left with a daughter, and I call my parents and say, I'm going to have to take a break here in my life and figure this out. And they said, well, whatever you need to do, you can do. I had gracious parents. They said, whatever you need to do, you can do. And so I moved back to my parents' house so Mom could help me with Amy. And I went back to school. I had a theology degree, but I didn't have any other credentials. And so you're looking at a fellow who went back to school and hurriedly finished an undergraduate degree in business and immediately entered the master's program. You're looking at a fellow who was working 40 hours a week while he was doing a master's program, carrying 12 college hours a semester while working 40 hours a week. Went to class Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night from 6 to 9 every night and studied on Friday night, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday to get ready to go back to school. And I turned a 2-year master's program in 18 months out of necessity, not because I'm smart or brilliant or good looking or anything else, out of pure necessity. Because I was about 32, 33 years old. Figuring anybody else that graduated with me already had a 10-year head start on me in any of the industries or the businesses that I might pursue, knowing I had ground to make up. So now, you got a fellow standing before you who's degreed three times over. Got some credentials, and I've got certifications after that, right? But sometimes it's not the how that we get things done, it's the who stands behind us while we get things done, right? Is that not right? I mean, Rahab didn't have much of have, right? And you and I might think that we have a lot of have. Man, I've got this and I've done that and I've moved here and I've executed well and so on and so forth. But brethren, at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you one thing. It's not the how that we get things done. It is the who that stands with us. It is the who. I saw in the bulletin a couple of weeks ago, I think that Todd is the finalist for the superintendent deal at Magnolia Schools. I'm not sure what a finalist means. I've never been one. But, you know, I hope that means that you're the guy. Now, when I was in the ministry, I had a fella that worshiped with us, Tony Monzingo, and he was a high school principal that had just finished a doctorate and wanted to become a superintendent. Tony was a good guy, good, faithful Christian. And Tony and I became very good friends, and Tony told me about how thin of an industry that is for superintendents. I mean, there's only one per school district, and some of those school districts are so small that if you're a superintendent, you might as well be almost a principal because they're just really that small. So to be a superintendent of a major school district like Magnolia or Houston or somebody like that, that's a pretty big thing. It really is a pretty big thing. Because, I mean, that industry, that's just a sliver. I mean, there's just not a lot of them, and it's a pretty closed class. I mean, you got to have your PhD, and generally you got to have years of experience, and you've got to been, you know, an assistant superintendent somewhere, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's kind of a tough deal to break into that little, you know, that little segment right there. It's a pretty big deal. And I'm sure, Todd, that you've got every credential you need to have, and I bet your wife is proud of you, and we're proud of you. We're glad that good things are happening to you. And Magnolia School District is going to be better off because it's going to be led by a Christian. It's going to be led by a Christian. That school district, whatever happened to it, it's going to be better because they have God's child. God in that school district. But I'm going to tell you something, Todd. If you forget the who got you there, never, ever going to be as successful as you could be. Ever. Ever. Rather, when we forget the who, we make a tragic mistake. Because I tell you one thing, save the cross of Christ, would we not all be labeled prostitutes before God? Would we not all? Better remember the who, hadn't we? I mean, we serve the God who is above the heavens and above the earth. And because of who He is and who stands with me, it allows me to overcome the problems of my life, to achieve the things I achieve, to have the richness and the robustness of life I have. But God help me if I forget the who. God help me. And you know what? In the world we live in the marketing that Satan does, we're very prone to forget that, right? Because, I mean, after all, we worked hard for our credentials and we worked hard to get the places that we need to be. And so our egos get caught up and Satan uses that. And he begins to just build that scaffolding underneath of us, right? Look what you've done and look what you've done and look what you've done. Don't ever forget who you serve. He's the Jehovah of heaven and He is the Jehovah of this earth. Maybe Rahab knew that better than some of us. Maybe she knew it better than some of us. Let's read on for a minute. I tell you one thing. She's no longer interested in serving pagan gods, right? Right? I mean, when she knew, listen, when she knew that judgment was coming, did she get desperate real quick? She got pretty desperate real quick, right? Have you ever read 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and following? I don't know where it ends, but if you start at 3, I'll tell you what, if you start at 2 Peter chapter 1, read the whole book, you'll get it for sure. But I believe it's 2 Peter chapter 3, and I think it starts at verse 3, and it reads on. And the questions that are going on there is this question. You know, it seems like to me that nothing changes in the world, that evil just continues to abound and abound and abound and abound, and I don't get it. And people are asking, why does that happen? And you know what Peter says about verse 7? He says, let me tell you, regardless of what you see, judgment is coming. Wrote that, he meant it then, and he means it today. And as long as you know that judgment is coming, if we'll never forget that, we'll be just like Rahab, right? We'll be desperate, right? We'll be desperate, won't we? We'll be desperate to turn to the God who rules the heaven and the earth. You bet. So desperation's not a bad thing. She was tired. She said, man, I'm tired of serving pagan gods. I want to talk to you about the God who rules your heavens and your earth. Because I know trouble's coming. And brethren, trouble is coming. This whole world's going to be a fireball someday. You need to pay attention to God, heaven, and earth, right? Read on with me here. Sorry, I get kind of carried away here. You know, there's another one, too, I think about, too, though. You know, just one more thing before I go back to verse 12. I was thinking, you know, something else too. If you think about Noah, Noah built an ark, right? Because he knew what? What did he know? Trouble's coming. Judgment's coming, right? He knew judgment's coming, right? And people laughing at him and mocking him and saying, why are you holding on to this stupid Jehovah? He's going, look, I got to work on the ark. I got to get the ark built because judgment's coming. And I'm desperate. I don't get the ark built. Me and my family, we're going to be in trouble. I got to build an ark. Because the God who rules the heavens and the earth told me to build an ark. I better build an ark. I mean, when we know judgment's coming, we get desperate. We'll do the things we need to do, right? So desperation's not necessarily a bad thing. Verse 12. I'm trying not to think anything else. Verse 12. She says to these guys here, now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I've shown kindness to you. What time is it? Okay, give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters. I'd save everyone except for my older brother. But anyway, but you know, because he treated me bad. He really did. God's going to get him pretty good, and I'm not sure I'd be able to plead for him. But anyway, I want you to save the lives of my father. Just a side note there about my family. I got family issues here. I need counseling. I understand that, and I'll get over it someday. But I don't worry about it today. I'm teaching right now, so y'all stay with me here. But my brother, he was rotten. He still is. I'm not kidding you. He's going to come visit me, and I'm going to bring him here, and y'all going to all ask him to repent. Y'all, one time. We're all going to... He says, give me a sure sign that you'll spare the lives of my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that belong to them, and that you will save us from death. She says, our lives are your lives. The man assured her, look, if you don't tell what we're doing, we'll treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. When the Lord gives us land, we're going to treat you right. So she let them put down by a rope through the window. For the house that she lived in was part of the city wall. And now she said to them, look, I want you to go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way. Go the way of the hills and be there for 3 days so the pursuers won't get you. Well, we could be there. I don't have time, but we could be there for a while, right? There is a right way, right, to get home. There is a right way, right? Now, I'm not always prone to want to take the right way. As a matter of fact, if you were to know me quite well, you would know that many days I'd rather not take the right way to get home. But did you notice here that one of the aspects of the right way, they're going to have to go and hide for 3 days. And she did not send them, as much as you might want to believe, she did not send them to a comfort end. She sent them to the hills. And she said, you go over there and hide for 3 days so the pursuers won't find you. And so, brethren, sometimes getting home, sometimes the right path takes a little bit of patience. right? And I mean, I don't know how it is with you now. Well, I know how it is with some men. And I know how it is with some women. They just soon never come home to their mates because they fight all the time. But my wife and I happen to love each other. And I'm gone for a couple, 3 days. I like to come home to mama. I like to get home. I mean, when everybody else is at the airport worrying about it, I'm trying to figure out if I can get on the plane because I want to come home. Because I like mama. I want to see mama. These guys here, they asked to go to the hills for 3 days. They've already been gone for a period of time, right? And they might have been talking to each other. They said, man, I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to go home and see my kids, my wife. Let's get out of here and go on. I said, no. She said, stay 3 days in the hills so the pursuers won't get us. So sometimes the right path takes patience. Have you ever read Exodus chapter 23? If you were to read Exodus chapter 23, and I think it's also found in Deuteronomy chapter 7, but it may not be, but I know it's found in the book of Deuteronomy. But I know it's in Exodus chapter 23. God says, makes the promise in Exodus chapter 23 that says, I'm going to drive all those nations that we looked at, the Hivites and the Amorites and the Zites. He says, I'm going to drive every one of those out of the land. That's what he says. That's the promise he makes. But you know what he says? He says, I'm not going to do it all at one time. I'm not going to do it all at one time. Because if I did it all at one time, then there wouldn't be anybody there to take care of the land, and the vicious animals would just multiply, and then when you went in there, you're going to have this other problem to deal with. So he says, I'm going to drive them out. How's he going to drive them out? Little by little. He's going to drive them out little by little. Little by little. And brethren, that's how we get home, isn't it? Little by little. Now, I'd love to wake up tomorrow and be the perfect husband, but I'm not going to be the perfect husband tomorrow. I'm going to become the perfect husband little by little. And for you women who are not the perfect wives and mothers that you need to be, you're going to get there little by little. And don't get frustrated. And don't even get worried. Just stay the course and know what's going to happen little by little. Little by little, we're going to get there. Little by little. It's going to take some patience, but little by little. But the most important thing you do is stay after it, right? Don't give up. Because if you get there little by little, you're finally going to get home. Finally. I think it's interesting, too, there was a specific path, right? She said, go here and then go there. I was smart enough to figure my own path out. You believe that? Well, I behave that way. Behave that way. But in that specific path through patience, do you know what they find? Safety. If you were to go chapter verse 23 of this very text, it says they finally get back to Joshua and they give him the message, these people are melting with fear, we can take this land. So brethren, there is a sure path. There is a right path. I tell you what, with patience, little by little, following that specific path, you're going to get there safely. You're going to get there unhurt. Now, that's pretty hard. That's pretty hard. Because I sit in meetings someday, and I bet some of you guys do too, where, you know, I've told you before, I'm a little bit of an introvert. That sometimes makes me a little bit shy. And other people are more dominant. And sometimes I'm figuring out how to react to that situation. And rather than just being reactionary, old John McCourt, a fellow who was a minister for years upon years, says it's always better to act and let other people react. Some of the soundest advice he ever gave me. It's always better to act in the will of God and let other people react rather than us reacting all the time. See, just little by little, little by little. Well, let's read on here. I want to get you out of here on time. And last week I did, and I'm going to this week. Verse 17. The man said to her, this oath you made us swear will be binding on us unless when we enter the land, you made a swear will not be binding on us unless we enter the land. You have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you brought your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house, if anyone goes outside your house into the street, his blood will be on his own head. Will not be responsible. As for anyone who is in the house with you, his blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we're doing, why, we'll be released from this oath that you made us swear. Agreed, she replied, let it be as you say. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet in the window immediately. Immediately. She tied the scarlet in the window. When they left, they went to the hills and they stayed 3 days until their pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. Then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills, they forded the river, they came to Joshua, son of Nun, and they told him everything that had happened to him. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting because of us." Now I'm sure that other people looked at that scarlet hanging out of the window. And I'm sure they thought, what foolishness. But you know, if you were to read Hebrews chapter 9, oh, by the way, if you were to read Hebrews chapter 13, about verse 31, you were in how God perceived Rahab. When we read about all those great people of faith in Hebrews chapter 13, whose names do you think's in there? Old Rahab, old prostitute Rahab's name's in there. As a child of faith. Child of faith. But can you imagine the people who looked at this and said, "Boy, this right here is stupid. What she's got that scarf hanging out the window for? How foolish can she be? Don't she know that we're fixing to have battle here and that old scarf blowing out of there, it might make her a target?" Well, if I recall, there were some people in the New Testament who said the teaching of the cross, well, how foolish is that? That's just pure foolishness. We're still waiting on the Messiah to come. Hebrews chapter 9, if you'll read in Hebrews chapter 9, you'll read that without blood, covenant is not confirmed, right? And so Moses confirmed the first covenant. And when he confirmed the first covenant, he took scarlet wool. Blood-soaked wool, blood of animals, to solidify that covenant. Scarlet. That's what it says, scarlet. Same word, same concept. Something about the scarlet blood covering our souls, isn't there? Isn't that precious? I mean, I want you to think about that for just a minute. There's something special about scarlet blood covering our souls so that as judgment comes, as trouble comes, while we might be afraid, and while we might have a lot of thoughts about it, and I do. I mean, I think about death occasionally as I get older, and I understand that things are going to be okay, but I have that fear. And, you know, as I think through that, though, the important aspect of all of life is the fact that there's something scarlet wrapped around me. And in that scarlet robe is safety. Is absolute safety. Let me say one more final thing and I am done. I think if I had to say anything about Rahab, I'd say she had the perfect faith, right? We know what perfect faith is? Anybody ever tell us what perfect faith was in the Bible? We're better Bible students than that. Somebody should have said the book of James says faith without what is dead. Faith without works. Because she not only believed, she confessed her belief, right? But she acted on that faith, didn't she? She acted on that faith. She's hid these men. She guided these men. She did everything she was supposed to do. And she turned and put her trust in the only true and living God of the heaven and the earth. She had that perfect faith. Had that element of perfect faith. So, brethren, I'm just going to encourage you here. I just want to encourage you here. I don't know what's going on in your life. You know, I probably should, but I don't. And some of us are probably on peaks, and some of us may be in valleys. It's hard to say on any given day, right? And if you're up today, you might be down tomorrow. And if you're down today, you might be up tomorrow. But I'm just telling you, if Rahab can get it done, hanging on to Jehovah, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Tomorrow's going to be okay. The rest of the day's going to be okay, and tomorrow's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Because I know if she can get it done, being a prostitute and a Canaanite and coming out of idolatry worship, I don't have any of those things. I mean, I have a likeness of those things in my life, but I mean, I don't have that legacy. I don't have that history. If she get it done, brother, we get it done by holding on, right? You ought to be encouraged, Dave. Because if she can get it done, and if you have an active faith, the perfect faith, you can get it done. Because the Jehovah of heaven and earth who lived then and took care of her on that wall on that day is the same one who's going to take care of us. I'll tell you one more thing. Now I really am going to quit. One more thing. Do you imagine, we're going to read about this in a couple of chapters. Do you imagine in just a few days, do you imagine when she looked out that window on the first day and the entire nation of Israel is walking around the city? What's she thinking? She's thinking, I hope it goes well with me today, right? Man, this must be it. She looks out there and she sees a sea of army of Israelites coming to the city and marching around the city. She's going, man, I hope those guys are true, and I hope Jehovah's right. I hope this thing works out for me, right? And the first day they walk around the city and they walk away, and she goes. And so she wakes up the next morning, she looks out the window, and here comes these people again. And she's going, well, today must be the day, right? Man, I sure hope everything works out for me today, right? And they do this for 7 days. For 7 days. Can you imagine the ups and downs of her emotion in her life for that period of time? Waking up every morning looking out and seeing the enemy come and knowing that judgment's on the way and thinking, have I done the right things? Have I made the right decisions? And am I in good? Right. You know, yeah, things are going to be okay. Hey, come in, get in the house real quick. You know, brothers, well, I mean sisters and moms and dads, not brothers, but sisters, moms and dads and all their children, get in the house. You know, 7 days of... Yeah. Today's going to be the day. And they go, well, nothing happened today. You sure you got this right? And she said, look, the only thing I know is that I'm going to serve the God who is above the heavens and who is above the earth. Brethren, peace go with you as we serve the God of the heavens and the earth. You're dismissed.